The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had looked at a statement of a comment that had been made by Sir Julian Huxley and has been often repeated. For those of you that perhaps were not listening last time, I want to go back and set the context for this because there is a conclusion I think it's important for us to come to. We have been looking at a section dealing with the origin of life from Luther Sunderland's book, Darwin's Enigma. Let me go back and begin with a comment by George Wald, which again has been repeated often. It is often stated by evolutionists that with enough time, anything could happen, regardless of how improbable it might be. In an earlier program, I'd given you an example of something that simply can't happen, regardless of how much time you have. This idea that anything can happen with sufficient time, I'm afraid, has infected the thinking of many, many people. And without giving critical evaluation to it, they simply come to the point, say, well, yeah, I guess maybe that's true. And on this basis, then, as I have made the comment often, not just improbable, but in my opinion, impossible requirements of evolution are given leeway to occur. And so this discussion we're having, I think, is a very important one for you to understand. It is often stated by evolutionists that with enough time anything could happen, regardless of how improbable it might be. Nobel Prize winner George Wald has said, quote, "Time is the hero of the plot. Given enough time, anything can happen. The impossible becomes probable, the improbable becomes certain." Prominent evolutionist Julian Huxley has stated that, given enough time, monkeys typing on typewriters could eventually type out the complete works of Shakespeare. Such uninformed statements have a dramatic effect on the layman, and even persons who have the mathematical background to know better often fail to make the simple calculations that would reveal the ridiculousness of the conjecture. For example, if there were monkeys typing on typewriters covering every square foot of the Earth's surface, and each one typed at random, a fantastic rate of 10 characters a second for 30 billion years, there would not be the slightest reasonable chance that a single one would type out a single specific five-word sentence of 31 letters, spaces, and punctuation. The actual probability is less than one chance in a trillion. Yet Huxley was permitted to make the preposterous statement that monkeys could type out the complete works of Shakespeare, and no evolutionary scientist or mathematician who knew better raised a single question. Fred Hoyle, again, has made a very interesting comment involving the same thing, and I'd like to refer to that in a book entitled Evolution from Space. Hoyle and Chandra Wickramasinghe, the following two paragraphs were in that book on page 148. Now, listen carefully and think about what is being said here. Quote, "No matter how large the environment one considers, life cannot have had a random beginning. Troops of monkeys thundering away at random on typewriters could not produce the works of Shakespeare for the practical reason that the whole observable universe is not large enough to contain the necessary monkey hordes, the necessary typewriters, and certainly not the waste paper baskets required for the deposition of wrong attempts. The same is true for living material. The likelihood of the spontaneous formation of life from inanimate matter is one to a number with 40,000 noughts after it, zeros after it. It is big enough to bury Darwin and the whole theory of evolution. There was no primeval soup, neither on this planet nor on any other. And if the beginnings of life were not random, they must therefore have been the product of purposeful intelligence." Now, I want to go here to a statement by a man by the name of LaFont, Louis LaFont. He reviewed a book entitled Chance and Certainty, Evolution in the Light of Modern Biology by Georges Sallet. There are two or three statements found on pages 7, 8, and 9 that I think are worth noting. In his work, Sallet draws all the consequences implicit in the law that the great mathematician Emil Borel has called the sole law of chance. Since it is the basis of all other laws of chance, it can be stated thus. Now again, give your attention to this definition of this law. A phenomenon whose probability is sufficiently weak that below a certain threshold will never occur. Never meaning here within the limits of space and time at our disposal. That is, in this universe, under the circumstances we see. Never meaning here within the limits of space and time at our disposal. That is to say, within the limits which it is possible to repeat the trials. For as long as a world, all of whose known dimensions are finite, allows. Again, let me repeat this because I think it warrants that repetition. It can be stated thus, a phenomenon whose probability is sufficiently weak, that is, below a certain threshold, will never occur. Never, meaning here, within the limits of space and time at our disposal. That is to say, within the limits within which it is possible to repeat the trials. For as long as a world of all whose known dimensions are finite allows. In other words, for a given event, there is a probability limit below which one may be certain this event will never occur within a fixed time limit. The number of chemical events which have occurred on Earth or which can occur in the future up to the end of the Earth's existence is certainly less than 10 to the 80th, 10 with 80 zeros after it. This is an enormous figure, but it is not infinite. The impossibility threshold of any chemical phenomenon on Earth is a probability of 10 to the minus 100th, 10 with 100 zeros after it. Now, if you know the math to follow the thinking here, this, in my opinion, is a very important statement. The number of chemical events which can have occurred on the Earth or which can occur in the future up to the end of the Earth's existence is certainly less than 10 to the 80th. This is an enormous figure, but it is not infinite. The impossibility threshold of any chemical phenomena on Earth is a probability of 10 to the minus 100th. The geological eras in question would have to be millards of times longer than even the most generous estimates make them. Milliards here is simply 1,000,000,000, that is a billion. So the statement is saying the geological eras in question would have to be billions of times longer, not billions of years longer, but billions of times longer than even the most generous estimates make them, for the mutation selection mechanism to have produced a single new organ. Now, what I intend in reading these quotes is simply to emphasize the fact that you must not accept the idea that anything can happen simply because you have a long enough time for it to happen in. Now, I want to go back, and I would like to read a comment by Sir Fred Hoyle. This was in an article entitled The Big Bang Astronomy and the New Scientist, published in 1981. On page 527, Hoyle makes this comment, quote, "At all events, anyone with even a nodding acquaintance with the Rubik's Cube," the Rubik's Cube was a an entertainment that was fashionable, a fad some years ago. At all events, anyone with even a nodding acquaintance with the Rubik's Cube will concede the near impossibility of a solution being obtained by a blind person moving the cubic faces at random. Now, there are 4 times 10 to the 19th possible scramblings of the Rubik's Cube. 4 times 10 to the 19th. That is 10 billion billion. Those are the possibilities for the different settings. At all events, anyone with even a nodding acquaintance with the Rubik's Cube will concede the near impossibility of a solution being obtained by a blind person moving the cubic faces at random. Now, imagine 10 to the 50th, 10 with 50 zeros after it, blind persons, each with a scrambled Rubik's Cube, and try to conceive of the chance of all of them simultaneously arriving at the same solved form. You then have the chance of arriving at random shuffling by just one of the many biopolymers on which life depends. Now let me go back and be sure you understand this. Here you got 10 to the 50th blind persons, each of them having a Rubik's Cube. The possibility that all of them would arrive at the correct solution at the same time. You then have that possibility is the same as the possibility. You then would have the chance of arriving by random shuffling of just one of the many biopolymers on which life depends. The possibility that that number of people with Rubik's Cubes would have the same solution at the same time is the same as the possibility of having one biopolymer, one enzyme formed as a result of random shuffling. You then have the chance of arriving by random shuffling of just one of the many biopolymers on which life depends. The notion that not only the biopolymers, but the operating program of the living cell could be arrived at by chance in a primordial organic soup here on the earth is evidently nonsense of a high order. Life must plainly be a cosmic phenomenon. A cosmic phenomenon. I would translate that cosmic phenomenon simply to God. It is something that God created.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.